Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face. Was I supposed to say that?
Yep.
Or was I supposed to act that out?
Hello and welcome, everyone. Come one, come all. Step into the China Shop today. Step right in. Opening the doors, got a special interview episode. Very excited about that. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm seeing green today. I am happy. Finally.
Hi, it's a blessed green morning for you.
Yeah, and only 2 months late.
Yes. Only a little late.
Yeah.
Well, we are joined today by Dr. Hans, the main investor over at theinvestingtutor.com. How are you doing today, Dr. Hans?
Doing very, very well, Dan and Kyle. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no, thanks for doing our show.
Yes, our pleasure.
It's nice to have credentialed people on here for a change rather than, comedians and pot companies.
Love those pot companies.
I know you do.
So Dr. Hans has finally joined us today. He's going to share with us a lot of his wisdom and the knowledge he's gotten. He's as a long-term investor. How long have you been investing? Playing around with stocks?
Yeah, I'd say, and I don't consider it playing around. I take it pretty serious, but it's been about 12 years.
Oh, well, that's more than enough time to learn your way around the dark streets of Wall.
How about you all?
I think, Dan, how long you been? We've been doing this about the same amount of time. You started really young, though.
Yes, I started dabbling when I was really young, about 13 years old.
Oh, wow.
I used a check my grandmother gave me for my birthday to buy a direct stock purchase from a utilities company, put it in a dividend reinvestment program, going to be my retirement. But then Enron happened. Yeah, kind of blew up on me.
So, Dan's always been a gifted picker.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I've been probably more serious about the long-term investing probably since right about 2007. So I too also picked a terrible time to start because I think it was maybe 3 or 6 months before the crash. I was still in the Navy. I was using my bonus money from the military, and it didn't do very well right off the bat.
Yeah, I'm super.
All right. Well, I had forgotten. We had planned on starting off with some music to, give you a little feel for what we do here in the China Shop.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, here. You should be able to hear this.
Now it's basic investing with the bulls in the shop, rising up to the challenge to go viral. And you must be a buyer, never sell those shares off, cause we're holding them all with an eye to retire.
Is that you, Dan?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I like it. I have a good time with the tunes. It's a lot of fun.
I was thinking we should use that for the intro song, but we kind of skipped that part already. All right, let's go ahead and start moving this thing along. It's Dr. Hans, so tell us more about your style. You say you're a long-term investor, and then you like to study the trends and the actual mechanisms that make the markets move. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that actually means?
Yeah. So I started investing, as I shared, pretty much about 10, 12 years ago. And at that time, I knew little to nothing about investing, right? So to Dan's point, in the beginning, the very first stock that I purchased was Netflix. And
I did one of those too.
It was about $50 a share. It was right around the time that I think Reed Hastings had announced that they were switching over to an online version of Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
The markets reacted quite negatively, right? They wanted their physical DVDs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. How could you dare tell us you want to put the movies on the internet? What is the internet? Oh my gosh, Netflix is going to go out of business for this movie. Mm-hmm. And so I believe the stock fell to about $50 per share. And that was around that time that I purchased 2 shares.
Mm-hmm.
So I purchased the shares and I saw it increase from $50 to $100 per share. And immediately I sold, sold investment. And I was like, yes, this is it. I've made it. I'm an investor. I've made money. This is it. And it took a while. Maybe a couple of months. And I was like, what was the point of that? I mean, I took the $100 gain that I had. I spent it on something that I don't remember. Clearly, this is not how wealth is built. So it kind of, I had to go back and, you know, begin learning from the best. How is investing done the right way? How does an individual build wealth? How do we understand what's happening, you know, in the economy with companies? And that's been the last 10 years, 10 to 12 years, the journey for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and along the way in 2016, I realized, so halfway into my journey, I realized that most of the individuals in my community or underrepresented groups, even women and, you know, millennials, most of us aren't taught much about the topic of investing.
Right.
So I saw that as an opportunity to, you know, come into this space as, you know, the investing tutor and simplify the subject of investing and then make it easy to understand. So yeah, that's when I launched my business in 2016, been running the business for about 5 years now, you know, working one-on-one was my initial business model. Now I hold workshops and things of that nature so I can work in a group. But believe it or not, in 2016, when the business kicked off, there wasn't a single individual that you could reach out to in the US to teach you one-on-one how to invest.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
Because I went to Google and I investing freedom. But I get it. To your question, it's because the financial industry has no incentive to want to teach you how to invest, right? They would prefer you bring your money. How can they make money off of your funds if you don't bring it over to them, right? Charge that 2% fee or 1% fee, right, or 3% fee? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the fee, but the model by which Wall Street is built, specifically the financial advisory business, mm-hmm, there's no incentive for them to want to show you how to invest, right? Because otherwise, they're not going to have a repeat customer.
Right.
If you are clueless about investing, you have to leave your money with them.
Right.
You have no other option, right? How are you going to invest if you don't know what a stock is, what a brokerage account is? I was shocked that I had friends come to me and say, "Hey, Hans, I keep hearing about a 401k. What is that?" And I looked at them. I was like, "Wait, what?" I was shocked.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, and right around the same time, a friend said, "What's a stock? How can I buy a stock?"
Dan?
Wait.
I think you have something for that.
I have something for this.
Okay.
Stock is a share, of course, with dividends paying out value of sorts. That is, of course, unless the source is running in the red.
That's a stock, Dr. Hans.
I'm loving this.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm really loving this. So I felt it as an obligation to begin to educate, you know. Mm-hmm. As I shared, people in my community, anyone who wanted to learn. And surprisingly, when I started back in 2016, believe it or not, social media didn't have a lot of personal finance, you know, being posted all the time as much as we have today.
Right. Yeah. It's all over social media these days.
All over. Oh my gosh. And it's been super incredible to see the change and the shift. Over time.
As far as doing the tutoring, did you have any special accreditations or anything that you had to actually go and apply for in order to do that?
No, you just have to read the SEC laws, which designate what a financial advisor who has to be, registered and everything has to abide by, right? So if a person, for compensation is managing people's money and then advising where the fund should go as to the purchase of specific securities.
Right.
Right. Then all of a sudden it gets into the wheelhouse of the SEC. But when an individual like myself is coming in saying, "Hey, I'm educating," and I'm not educating about specific stocks and securities, but rather I'm teaching an individual, okay, this is a stock. This is how you analyze it. This is how you identify good performing stocks. This is what you look out for. And I do the same with index funds or exchange traded funds.
Mm-hmm.
This is an ETF. You know, this is what an expense ratio means. You know, this is how you look at the holdings within an ETF. All of a sudden, it puts me in the classification of an educator or someone who is not providing personalized, financial advice.
Yeah, because that's definitely a very tricky a gray area or area you don't want to get caught in.
Definitely not. Yeah, that's why before I launched my business, one of the first things that I did was, download and read the entire.
Oh my God, how long did that take?
Oh man, but you have to do it, right? So I always, if you were to go to my website, you see all of the disclaimers. Plus, when I'm working one-on-one with individuals, I never even up. The funny thing is the SEC designation says for compensation, if you are like telling people what to do, right? Mm-hmm. But even if people message me who are not, paying members, so literally free individuals who follow me on social media. If they were to message me and say, "Hey, Dr. Hans, what do you think about this stock?" I won't share my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell them, go analyze it. Or I can speak from my perspective,
Right.
For example, I can say, based on my opinion, this is what I think.
Right.
So that it's not taken as, offering advice.
You're not prescribing an action.
Definitely. Right. Yeah.
I think we had David Modell on. He was very, very cautious about making sure that he put the disclaimers out. "I am not licensed. Do your own research before you would tell us anything about the wheel." Yeah.
Do you do anything with any of the securities like options or Forex or futures, or are you more stock trading in general?
Yeah, so I don't do any of the options and Forex. For me, it's more, just stock market. And now slowly but surely started to branch into crypto.
Crypto.
Yeah.
I'm still scared of crypto. And I think that's more because I don't fully understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And I completely understand why you're scared. I've been studying the market for the past two, almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just scratching the surface as to the amount of information out there.
About. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
We've had a couple guests on who specialized in that, and I still walk away like, like, wait, it's only worth that because we say it's worth that. What does it do? What does it do?
Right?
Well, it's not necessarily because we say it's worth that. So that's right. one portion of it, which, you know, is if people are willing to exchange real currency for that, it imbues the asset a certain value because, you know, we're exchanging dollars or currency for that. That's part right. of it. The other is energy, right? And that's why we hear in the news.
Oh.
Because you need energy to maintain mine and
right.
maintain the Bitcoin network. And that energy costs money. So that's also a value that's, you know, being placed onto the network.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, something just clicked in my head there.
Yeah. So because think of, and this gent, and I know we're talking about stocks, not crypto, but
that's all right.
And one share that, you know, the amount of energy that's used to mine, let's say, one Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to ask yourself, how do I capture that amount of energy and move it anywhere across the globe, like that exact same amount of energy, or transfer mm-hmm. that same amount of energy 100 years into the future without losing any of that energy? The only way you can do that is via Bitcoin.
Yeah, but I can't stick a Bitcoin in my electric vehicle and have it run.
you actually can.
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah. Smart devices can have their own digital wallets and make payments and everything. So,
that's just paying for it. But the energy that was gone into creating the Bitcoin is gone at that point, right? It's been converted into the product.
Absolutely. It's been converted into the product and it is holding that value, right? So for example, if a person wanted to go purchase that amount of energy, they can use that portion of Bitcoin at any time to be able to get an equivalent amount of that energy.
Huh.
Yeah.
So there is an actual asset that's backing it then, if you think of it in that terms. Because that's always been one of my main holdups.
Yes, there definitely is. And also another value prop that you have to think about is, you know, the network effects, right? Mm-hmm. There is value in a network. For example, Facebook is a social network. The reason why Facebook becomes more valuable as more people use the network, right? The incremental user makes the network more valuable. It's the exact same for Bitcoin.
Right.
Every incremental user makes the Bitcoin network more valuable because then there's more people that we can transact that global digital currency with. So that is also another layer of the value of Bitcoin. Like I said, there's a ton.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Let's jump back to stocks real quick. You mentioned the process of trying to analyze and choose good stocks. What are some of the things that you look for when you're picking a stock or when you're going through, like, what do you set your screeners up to search for?
Yeah, before I even go to a screener, I ask some very simple, basic questions, which I think, you know, any and everyone can ask.
Mm-hmm.
First one is, do I love or even care about this company that I'm looking to invest in, right? It's very basic. I try to keep things simple. If the answer is no, I'm not buying it. If the answer is yes, okay, then now I can move on to the next question. Do I understand their business? How are they making money? Do I understand it? What is their business? You know, how are they making money? That's the number two. And number three, will this company continue to grow into the future? Meaning, are they, whatever they are selling, are they going to be selling more of it? Will they have more customers? Right. So we can take Disney, for example. Will there be more Disney Plus subscribers 5-10 years from now? The average person listening to this podcast can tell you, you know, with confidence, yes.
Yes.
So by that very simple answer, an individual can have a strong, you know, estimated guess as to the potential growth of Disney without knowing, oh, is it going to be 20%, 25%? That doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But a person can buy that knowing that, oh, at least I know my money will grow and continue to grow into the future. Right. So those are the basics that I try and cover before I even sit down to even analyze.
Well, those are some great questions. I think Dan and I have talked about that before. That's kind of one of Buffett's like keys that we've mentioned multiple times is picking companies that you know the product has a use and will continue to have a use, like Gillette razors during the .com bubble.
You understand where the company gets its money.
Right. So does that mean that you stay more away from growth stocks or stocks that are like an inception, something like Virgin Galactic that doesn't actually make any money yet, but is hopefully on the path?
I love those companies. So
okay.
I know you mentioned Buffett, like, you know, I was a student of Buffett.
Mm-hmm.
I see myself as, during the early days of my education about this field, I learned as much as I could from the best out there, right? So the Ray Dalios, the Warren Buffett, the Peter Lynch's, you know, the Stanley Druckenmiller. I mean, just learned as much. So I, you know, went across and just learned from everyone. And what I did was I just picked out the best
from
each individual person and then applied it in a way that really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not your typical value investor or, you know, or this particular like momentum trader or, you know, only a growth or tech investor.
Right.
I tend to look from a fundamental standpoint. So I don't necessarily perform a lot of technical analysis, right? I look at companies from a fundamental standpoint and then try and anticipate or estimate their future value. So a company like Virgin, which doesn't have any revenue, you know, it's difficult because they are at the very early stage. So the question that a person has to ask is, how confident are you that Virgin Galactic is going to be able to deliver on their goals?
Depends on when you ask. If you asked me 2 months ago, I'd have been very confident. The last 2 weeks, not as much.
That's the only reason why I haven't necessarily purchased, Virgin Galactic yet. But that doesn't mean, you know, that company will not be successful. I just need to be quite certain.
Right.
Before I, you know, if SpaceX was a public company.
Oh, I'd have been on that one in a heartbeat.
No brainer, right? Yeah. Even if they are not making any money, just a no brainer.
Just the cult of Elon Musk will sustain that stock for decades.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, So I asked those three questions. Then I look at, you know, other metrics. I can share a few of them with you.
Sure.
I look at revenue growth over time. I look at Wall Street sentiments, right? Mm-hmm. So analyst sentiments. I think it's super important. I also look at, EPS or earnings per share growth over time.
Right.
To see, okay, hey, is how is this company growing profits over time? About 12 other metrics, but the ones that I shared with you, I would say, are some of the highlights of what I look at. So analyst sentiments, as well as analysts' price targets, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Revenue growth over time. And then, you know, earnings per share, EPS growth.
I like cash flow too. I like to see cash on hand versus debt.
Yeah, I mean, cash is king, right?
And then what's the other one? Return on equity. That's another one I really like.
How are they using, you know,
what's their efficiency of the revenue that they're bringing in? How much are they actually clearing or making profit on?
Absolutely.
Dan, I think you had a question about the beginner investors.
Yeah, what do you find is are some of the most common mistakes people make when they're first starting out in investing?
Oh, that's quite simple. They think that they can spend the next 10 to 15 years paying off all of their student loans. And once they are done, they are going to have more money to be able to allocate into the market and have enough time to reach retirement. Yeah, that's just hilarious. yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, right, think about like, oh, I'm going to pay off all my debt so that I have more money, right? So I can invest double the amount that maybe I can invest now, right? Mm-hmm. I can double it. And in 15, even if I start in 15 years, I'm going to have twice the amount so I can make it up.
Yeah.
Huge mistake.
Yeah, and compound interest is amazing.
It is mind-blowing. You know, the day that I discovered that the average person would have to invest four times their money to make up for waiting, I think about 10 years or so, I was shocked. Yeah, they need to invest four times their money to make up for waiting about 10 years. So then, you know, it just seems like when you just think about it, oh, yeah, I'll double my money. So then, meaning once debt is paid off, I can double the amount of money I'm investing. So people think that, and
that'll make up. Yeah,
I will make up. And the funny thing is, they don't even know what cycle the market is going to be in. Are we going to be in a decade downward, or just a flattening of the market like we experienced from 2002 all the way to, like, you know, 2008, 2009, right after that peak and then bottom. So that year was literally flat in terms of gains. So individuals don't understand all of this, and they think they can just pick and choose when they can come into the market, and, you know, the market is going to be waiting for them because they have more capital to allocate into the market. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that I see out there. Beyond that, it is trying to time the market. Right, a person has money, they are ready to invest. And to your point, they're like, oh, I'll just wait for the stock to dip. as if they control what the stock market is going to do.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll just wait for it to dip and then I'll buy it. Okay, what if it keeps going up? What if you experience a 2009 through till 2019 market where the S&P 500 grew about 500%. You'd be sitting aside waiting for a market crash that never arrives.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the waiting, though, that I think that one of my favorite sayings is, like, the best time to start investing is yesterday. The next best time is today.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree.
And I think, Dan, you've had some experience with trying to time things.
Oh, yeah, my timing is not good.
Nobody's is.
But I'll tell you, you really did speak to my own experience. It wasn't until I started paying myself first, saying, all right, yeah, whatever debts I got, it doesn't matter. I'm going to prioritize. The first bill I pay is to my brokerage account. And then all of a sudden it started growing. Even if I'm making bad decisions, and I'm not necessarily picking the best stocks, my portfolio is growing.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I just ignore the debts in them now. Now I'm a year in, and
so you ignore them. Hang on.
I still pay them. Like, I'm not in trouble here. They're not gonna come take my car. But I'm not as worried. And it's been fantastic because I've watched this portfolio literally grow from zero to something substantial.
Right.
Yeah. One last thing that I'd add, and this will surprise you both. Because you're kind of in the finance field, but the average person thinks that the price of a stock tells them whether a stock is cheap or affordable. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Ford, you know, I don't even know what Ford stock is right now, but
it's back about then 13.
It was about $9 per share, right? So someone mm-hmm. would see a Ford stock for $9, and then they'll see Amazon back in the day when it was 900, right?
Right.
Obviously, right now Amazon is like 3,000, but
yeah,
they would see both stocks, and if they have to purchase a stock, even though they can buy fractional shares, they will say, "Oh, the Ford stock looks cheaper, so I can afford it."
Yeah, market cap is a market and capitalization.
I know they don't even most people. Well, 99.9% of people don't know what market cap is.
Right.
So then to them, they're just looking at price. Yeah. And price tells, I keep saying it, price tells you nothing.
I keep having trouble with my mom. I give her a couple stocks that I've liked over the years and say, you should check out this one. I think it just got hit with some bad news. It'll recover. And she'll look and be like, that's $130 a share. That's too expensive.
There you go.
No, it's cheap right now, Mom.
There you go.
So, yeah, a lot of people make that mistake.
So how do you go about identifying when the market cycle has shifted to a new cycle, a new?
Well, first, can you explain the cycle in general, like? You kind of briefly touched on it, but
trying to keep it very simple, right?
Yeah.
With the economy, we have, cycles of expansion where, you know, everything is booming, you know, oh my gosh, what they used to, back then, 1920 was called Roaring Twenties, right?
Right.
So you often hear in the news, we're about to enter the Roaring Twenties. Well, the past like 4 or 5 months doesn't feel like it in the stock market. Yeah. And then you have cycles of contraction, right? So to kind of, what's the word that I'm looking for to differentiate the two, right? Mm-hmm. In the booming markets or the expansionary markets, that's where you have capital flowing in an economy. And the rates, so interest rates attached to the capital to be able to borrow that capital is really low. So then there is an incentive for people to want to borrow money. And when they borrow money, they spend, right?
Right.
And what most people don't realize is every dollar that you spend is someone else's salary. And that person also gets to spend that money, and it's someone else's salary. So when there is free flow of money, cash, at low rates in an economy, it is expansionary, right? It allows an economy to boom.
Okay.
The opposite happens when rates begin to increase. So if you're wondering, why have we barely moved if this should be roaring 20s? Because the market is terrified. When is the Fed going to increase rates? Because when rates go up, you know, that money that is in circulation becomes super expensive.
Right.
Right? Because because now, oh my gosh, what? Rates are higher? Are people going to want to borrow more money? Are people going to want to spend? No, it's too expensive. I don't want a mortgage for 5% interest. Right. What? 5%? It's not like in 1980, interest rates for homes
like was 12 about, or 13. Oh,
exactly. 5%? Whoa, 5? You know, so the market right now is anticipating, even though the Fed has said we're not increasing rates till 2023 or 2024.
I was gonna say that. Yeah. Why are they still freaking out about it every single week? Every week they come on and say that.
Yeah, it's almost like you're at a party and the hosts keep telling you, let's imagine it's about midnight, and the host keeps saying we're going to party till 6 a.m. and people are having such a good time. They're like, what if they decide to end this party at 1? How do we know that they are not going to end it at 1? While you're dancing, you hear sirens, you know, outside. You're like, oh my gosh, will someone come and break this party up? Wait, are you sure you're going to keep this party going no matter what? And the host keeps saying, I'm keeping this party going. And people are like, are you sure? How are we certain? You know, so right now the market is not taking time to just enjoy the low rates. Yeah. They are terrified that rates will increase. And the thing that is causing them to be terrified, you know, referencing the sirens that I had shared, like, you know how
if
you are partying and, you know, cops are like, hey, why are you guys making noise? Party over. You know that the party is done. When a police officer says, you know, everyone go home.
Move along, yeah.
Well, that police officer, as an analogy, is inflation. And people are like, what is inflation? Well, inflation is when the cost of goods and services go up, right? And the worst thing, and I don't want to get too much into economics here for the listeners, so just take my word for it. The worst thing that can happen is for inflation to go up and then interest rates below. That is the worst thing to happen, because then prices of goods and services are soaring while there's more money in circulation. So it makes your money worth less.
Kind of a vicious cycle that feeds
it. Yep. So people's money in their savings account, you might have $10,000 in your savings account, but if inflation takes off, that $10,000 could realistically be worth $5,000. So when that happens, when inflation, you know, becomes real, the Federal Reserve has no choice but to increase interest rates.
Right.
So now think about it. We're having a party. You kind of, it seems like we're hearing,
well, we're definitely hearing sirens.
Seems like we're hearing it, but we haven't seen anyone at the door yet. And you're wondering if it's just your mind making you hear it, but it's, you know, and the reason there's a fear for inflation is because of the amount of money that's been printed over in 2020. About 27% of all of the US dollars in circulation was printed in 1 year. About 25 to 27% more dollars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you found a graphic that was kind of...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I shared a graph on our Discord server that showed the M3 and how it spiked in 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want people to imagine, literally, there's more dollars chasing the same goods and services we have, right? Because keep in mind, we've been locked up. So it's not like, so there's more money chasing goods and services. So realistically, those, you know, assets or those things should increase in value because there's just more money in circulation. That money has to find a place. That's why, you know, and it's funny. Can I share something? You know, most people celebrate that their home values are increasing. And it's funny because from a financial standpoint, you need to ask yourself, why? Why is your house worth 10 or 15% more just in 1 year? It's not by accident, folks.
Don't burst my bubble.
I know it could be the sirens outside. And that's why the market is hesitant. Now, let's translate that into tech stocks. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, technology stocks are companies that have to grow quickly. And the way that they grow quickly is by getting access to more capital, more cash. So for them, they can borrow a ton of money at low rates and be okay because they are growing at such a fast pace. They can then pay back all of those, you know, loans, right? Mm-hmm. So tech companies benefit in a low interest rate environment because it gives them more cash. And imagine that cash is plowed into their business and then what? They are growing exponentially. But what happens when all of a sudden the money that you're going to borrow costs a lot more?
Right.
Now, tech doesn't seem as attractive because it becomes risky.
Right.
The capital costs much more.
So is that why we're seeing the rotation out of growth in tech?
Yes, it's partly because of the inflation fears, which, mm-hmm. Translates into interest rates increase fears. And also, we have to understand that 2020, there was literally no money, and that's an exaggeration, going into value stocks.
Right.
So we need to have a broadening of the market if we want it to be sustainable. Right, we cannot have all the capital going into only a handful of sectors. Right, so we're seeing a broadening out of the market, meaning some of the money that was placed in tech is being reallocated to other other sectors.
Right.
Right.
Like energy, looks like energy and utilities, I think, have been benefiting a lot lately, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Safe. And dividend paying.
Yep. I was surprised. I was looking at, my portfolio, which is heavy in tech. And the funny thing is, at the beginning of this year, I had a choice to rotate out of tech or keep it in tech. And I made a decision to keep a large portion of it in tech because I just assumed that the current administration will do whatever they need to do to, keep the party going.
Right. Yeah.
What I didn't think about, and which is very hard to anticipate, is whether the people at the party will be concerned about, regardless of what the host is saying, if people at the party are more worried about what could potentially happen, they are not even enjoying the party. That is what I missed.
And so they're ruining it for you too.
Right. I know. So that is market. that tells you the psychology of participants in the market is what at the end of the day rules, not your well-studied thesis on how things should play out, because my thesis was spot on. Oh my gosh.
Infrastructure.
Yes, infrastructure about to put another $2 trillion of stimulus checks in people's hands. Mm-hmm. They are going to give EV credits to Tesla. Yeah. Oh my gosh, we're good. We're good to go. I mean, on paper, it looks splendid. How can you judge that the market is going to be scared of increasing of inflation? And
right.
I mean, the Fed literally said, we are not thinking about raising rates. What else do they want to hear?
They want to hear it every week, it seems like. Like, oh, that's a lame party.
Yeah, it's a lame party. People are not even dancing. They are looking out the window.
Yeah. Telling everyone to be quiet.
I think I hear something. That's a great analogy.
Yeah, that's very awesome explanation too. I think it just made a lot of things kind of click in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in the same boat you were. I think, Dan, you as well, we were making the bet that Biden's infrastructure plan going towards EV stocks mm-hmm. should have been benefiting from this. But yeah, if everybody else is afraid of it and pulling their money out of it, well, that's not going to do you any good.
Guess that's why my Westwater Resources is down so much.
Yeah, mine too.
Amazon is pulling in $100 billion per quarter. What? Mm-hmm. $100 billion in revenue. That is a boatload of money.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the stock has barely moved.
Right.
What?
More money than some countries.
And, I know, right? You know the funny thing? Meanwhile, Doge is up 24,000%.
I know.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a joke.
I know, right? It's. I mean, so at some point, I took a seat and I was like, you know, Hans, you are so articulate with your views of the market and the prospects, and you know this cycle and that cycle, and you know this stimulus and all of that. And look, Doge is up 24,000%. What did you miss? Market psychology. And yeah. It's interesting. If I had not brushed off Doge as a joke, I had the opportunity in January. I brushed it off. We go, it's a joke. I'm not even going to pay attention to it. So guess what? I missed one important piece of information, which would have changed everything. No. It was listed on Robinhood.
Oh,
that is key, because with cryptocurrency, demand is what determines its price movement. And if we have an on-ramp for retail from beginning investors all the way to, you know, more knowledgeable investors, once there's an on-ramp, which we all know Robinhood is the number one retail investing app.
Mm-hmm. Are they still?
Yeah.
Even after three times they've screwed investors out of cryptocurrencies.
Last week.
I love you, baby. I didn't mean it.
Last week, the CEO of Robinhood, Vlad Tenev, he shared a picture on Twitter. Number one most downloaded app, Robin. Wow. Yeah.
No such thing as bad press, I guess.
I guess.
So that was the thing that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was brushing, it's a joke. And it was on Robinhood. And guess what? Many people don't sit down to perform fundamental or technical analysis the way that we do. Some people just want to buy something because it costs 5 cents. Remember our discussion about price.
Value, right.
Yeah, 5 cents, 10 cents. Oh my gosh, Bitcoin is 50,000. This is 5 cents. I can buy a little.
Right.
It is the retail perspective. There's no, I'm just buying this because I want to buy it. And no one can stop me, right? Yep. And I'm not talking about myself.
Right.
Even though I wish I had put about $1,000 into Doge, because if I had in January when I discovered that it was listed on Robinhood, it would be worth roughly about $150,000 today.
I think I saw something. This is, I think, before the crash after Elon Musk went on SNL, but they said that if you put all of your stimulus checks into Dogecoin, you'd be a millionaire.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's been fascinating to watch.
It's a joke, but nobody's laughing anymore.
Not anymore, no.
Yeah, especially not. Yeah, or the only people laughing are the ones who invested. Did you hear about the Goldman Sachs a manager who quit his job 2 days ago?
No.
Yeah, district manager in London. He quit his job because he's become a multimillionaire because of Doge.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Good for him.
Wow. Well.
Well, Dan, do you have anything else you want to cover?
Actually,
I kind of want to ask about, have you followed Jumia by any chance?
Yeah, not closely, but Jumia is one of the investments that I hold.
Okay.
But it's more of a long-term investment.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't necessarily follow it like on a day-to-day basis like I do Tesla. So my thoughts about Jumia, when we look at how Amazon has, you know, utilized e-commerce as a way to dominate the retail field in, you know, the US, and now they're expanding to India.
Oh, and, they are.
You know, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. During the pandemic. During the pandemic, ton of money, you know, was flowing into India, especially Amazon. So yeah, they are looking at being able to deliver, you know, retail goods in India.
Mm-hmm.
So just looking at the blueprint of what Amazon has been able to do, it begs the question, what's the, you know, retail supergiant in Africa? And I just couldn't find any such player. So when Jumia popped up, you know, at that time, I believe it was worth anywhere between 3 to 5 billion or so. I was like, Amazon is worth $1.5 trillion.
Right.
Jumia is looking to serve the entire continent, not only a country, you know,
<Yep. laughs>
the continent of Africa. And I was like, man, this company should be worth way more than, you know, 5 billion or whatever. You know, even if it's 10 billion, it should be worth way more than that by comparison. So then that was the thesis. Also, they had some incredible backers, right, in terms of prior investors into Jumia. That was also a confirmation. And also, it was a service that I knew individuals back home who've utilized it, and they really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Checks all the boxes.
Yeah, it definitely does. So now I viewed it as more of a long-term investment. And
yeah, because I think they're still not profitable. Actually, their earnings are today, I think, or maybe tomorrow. I think they're tomorrow. I think they've yet to actually post a profit, but they've definitely grown quite a bit thanks to the pandemic.
Yes, significantly. It took off substantially. When I purchased Jumia, it was around $20 per share. I watched it drop to $3 per share. And then during the pandemic, it took off from $3 all the way up to about $24, $30. And I was like, God, why didn't I buy in at $3?
But right.
Going back to the point, you can never anticipate, predict what the market is going to do. You just can't.
Well, a lot of its big run-up, I think, was got sucked into the short squeeze with GameStop and all the other ones. It had a really healthy short interest on it when it was, I think it ran up to almost 60.
Gotcha.
It did. Oh, it went up to 60?
I think it hit 60 at one point.
In February, it got over 60.
Wow. Yep. That even tells you and confirms that I really view it as a long-term investment.
Yeah, it does.
Look at it.
That's kind of what I was thinking as it was running up there. I'm thinking, like, yeah, this is going to be something huge in 5 years if it doesn't get bought out by an Amazon or somebody trying to get a foothold, because that's really the only
exactly.
The only way in. Dan, do you have anything else, or should we move on to the fun stuff and kind of wrap this up?
I think it's time to move on to some fun stuff. We've gotten some great stock advice and analogies. You've really opened, I know, my eyes. I'm pretty sure Kyle's too.
Oh yes,
on a lot of this stuff.
We like to prepare something special for each of our guests to kind of have a little bit of fun to close these things up. So since you're a doctor, I've put together a list of. Well, you'll get a multiple choice of doctors that are on television, and you have to tell me which doctor is actually a real doctor.
Absolutely.
Are you big on watching the medical shows?
A few of them.
Okay. All right, you ready?
Okay.
Okay, so Dr. Connor Rhodes, Dr. Gregory House, or Dr. Hawkeye Pierce. Which one of these actually holds a doctor title?
Gregory House.
No, he does not. That's Hugh Laurie. He has some fellowships, but actually Alan Alda has gotten multiple honorary doctorates.
Hawkeye Pierce.
Yep,
Hawkeye Pierce. Is a real doctor.
Kind of. I don't. How do you view the honorary doctorates? Do you guys consider those real doctors?
I mean, it's conferred, you know, on an individual. So to a certain extent, I guess.
Short answer, no.
Yeah, I was always wondering about that. They're in acting, though, so I think he's at least, you know, earned his chops on that.
It just would be fascinating. And I don't know, like, I'm just curious if it would be fascinating. Let's say I didn't, you know, pursue a doctorate degree and I was, you know, conferred. You know, will I expect people to call me doctor? You
know? I know, right? Yeah, do they?
There's this psychological thing associated with that, you know.
Right. Yeah. I think if somebody got an honorary doctorate, I would not call them doctor. It's like calling a chiropractor a doctor. I won't do it.
I won't do it either.
All right, next batch. Dr. Ken Jeong, Dr. Doogie Howser, or Dr. Meredith Grey?
Meredith Grey.
I see, you would think. But no, Dr. Ken Jeong is actually a real doctor, and he's a real medical doctor as well. He went through medical school. He's the Asian fellow that played the Spanish teacher on Community. He's
in the Hangover. He had his own
show that came out called Dr. Ken.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Okay. All right. Last one then. Last one. We'll wrap this up. All right. Dr. Pepper, Dr. Seuss, or Dr. Acula?
Oh my gosh. This is a good one. Oh my lord. Can you repeat it?
Dr. Pepper, Dr. Seuss, or Dr. Acula?
Dr. Acula.
No, yes. That's actually just Dracula.
Also the one, Dr. Seuss, yeah. No, that's also the one I chose in the pre-call when Kyle was telling me about him. I was like, oh, it's definitely Dr. Acula.
Yeah, I was like, definitely not Dr. Pepper. And I was like, Dr. Seuss?
Dr. Seuss, yes. He has an honorary degree. He dropped out of school. And then he took on the moniker to appease his parents. But then he actually ended up getting an honorary after. The Dr. Pepper one was kind of interesting because everyone thinks it's based or it was named as an homage to a Dr. Pepper in the town where Dr. Pepper was actually created. But there's nothing that really confirms that. So I would have taken Dr. Pepper, but.
Yeah, But the Dracula one was pretty talented. Dracula.
That's actually a Mitch Hedberg joke. I think he said he went to get a blood drawn. Don't ever go see Dr. Acula. Yeah. All right. Dr. Hans, you gotta tell people where they can find you. Are you on any of the socials? You got your website?
Yeah.
The Investing Tutor.
You all, this has been absolutely phenomenal. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. Thank you.
No, I always enjoy being able to, you know, talk about the economy, whether it's macro or micro, and looking at the future and what's ahead. For this year, I feel there's going to be, you know, this volatility as we continue to figure out what's ahead. Right. I mean, every other day there's something new, whether it's, you know, taxing the rich or finding ways to spend more money or, you know, whatever it is that will be next. So that uncertainty is going to continue, especially this year. And also the reopening, right? Are we going to be able to reopen successfully? Are we going to reach herd immunity? There's so many questions in play. So I'm going to continue to kind of watch and monitor. Most importantly, I'm going to continue to broaden my perspective, mm-hmm. you know, specifically with the cryptocurrency, not the one like today I heard, oh, there's this Shiba Inu coin or no, I can't. But the projects that are really making a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as we see the stock market kind of go sideways or down, and we see the crypto market, you know, take off on a rocket to the moon, it begs the question. Literally. It begs the question, you know, should we learn or educate ourselves about this asset class? So I'm going to continue to do that. For individuals who kind of want to follow, you know, my journey or, you know, the information that I share, you can find me on Instagram at The Investing Tutor. So that's THE Investing Tutor.
We'll put a link to that in the episode description.
Oh, for
appreciate
sure.
it. And my website, I have a free stock, you know, workshop. So if individuals want to check that out, it is www.theinvestingtutor.com. And this was an absolute delight. Really loved the discussion.
I think we've got left a lot on the table too. We barely scratched the surface. I think if you're up for it, we'll probably try to have you back on maybe in a month or two.
Yeah, let's make that happen. We'll see what analogy I can come up with on this.
I'll have to do some more doctor research too.
How about you, Reese? And it's funny because if you had done the episode on which one of these individuals have played a key role in the U.S. economic system, right?
Oh.
Ben Bernanke, because I know probably about 100 times more the market and the economy and that than I do about the healthcare field. Because been my entire focus for the past 12 years. When I was in pharmacy school, I was reading more about the stock market and finance than I was about pharmacy, even in school.
Well, then one last quick question from me then is, can you name an economist that started out poor and got rich?
Started out poor and got rich.
Yeah, like a rags to riches economist.
Let's see. Well, I don't know if you would need to check, but let's I'll go with Paul Krugman.
Paul Krugman. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I need to see his beginnings if he started out, you know, poor, but he's doing pretty well. And he's one person that comes to mind.
Because Kyle and I have often discussed that doesn't seem like there's a lot of rich economists out there.
Yeah. I wouldn't say he's super rich, but you know he's probably doing well.
Does all right.
He was born to a Russian Jewish family.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, he's in 1922 also. So probably an immigrant. I'm guessing he probably didn't do too well coming over here.
Yeah.
Most of the time they left everything behind when they did that.
And 1922, you know, a couple of years right before the Depression.
Yeah. All right. Good call. Paul Krugman. Wow. Thought he was going to stump you there.
Almost did.
I told you when it comes to money, finance, economy, man.
That's your jam.
It really is.
All right, Dan, you want to wrap us up?
Yeah. Oh, this has been so fantastic having Dr. Hounds with us here in the shop. We're so glad you all came and gave it a listen, and you've made it here to the end. But as always, we got to shut the door sometime. We know Wall Street's dangerous after dark. But
are we? Is the party over?
Yeah, this party's over. You're going to have to find another one until next time. But we promise we'll be back at you soon. And until then, happy trades.
Bye, folks.
Bye, everyone.
To Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.